It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you this morning. Does anybody remember yesterday we talked about the fact that Jay Johnson made a comment, a few weeks ago about possibly the voting booths, the electronic voting devices being, taken sort of under the umbrella of the federal government, be sort of like the electrical grid because they were so concerned about hackers? And Hans von Spakovsky and I talked about this yesterday. Hans is a fellow at the Heritage Foundation, an expert on voter fraud. And I asked him about that. I said, this seems very strange to me, Hans, don't you? And this is what he said.
This is the same White House that says there's no voter fraud in the United States. You know, they deny that voter fraud ever occurs. And yet suddenly they're saying, we may need to designate as critical infrastructure the American election system. Now, what most people don't realize is that That's very pertinent language because after 9/11, we passed this federal statute that allows the president or the Secretary of Homeland Security, if he does that designation, it means that the Department of Homeland Security and the Justice Department, the FBI, are given special authority to go in and try to thwart any potential terrorist or other activity or attacks on that critical infrastructure. And so this would give the Justice Department, for example, suddenly power over precincts and polling places all across the country, something they don't have right now. And listen, he was asked, that is Jay Johnson, he was specifically asked by one of the state secretaries of state, Tom Scheduler of Louisiana, whether they've got any evidence of any credible threat against our system, and Jay Johnson's answer was no.
All right, Hans and I talked about this a bit, and I said I laid out a scenario. I said what I see happening here is this attempt to draw a link between Donald Trump and the Russians and this allegation that the Russians have hacked the DNC email, the Russians have hacked, some other email that belonged to the left. And so now there's this potential hacking of, our voter booths. And so now, and as you say, Hans said, if it's labeled critical infrastructure, that's the buzzword of the federal government. The Justice Department, manned by the left of the left, could come in and come to the rescue of any kind of voting issues we might have, which, of course, I believe they're setting up the narrative already that it's going to be the Russians. In order to help Donald Trump, I'm telling you, this is my thought. Maybe, call me crazy. But last night, I couldn't help but notice Catherine Herridge did the first report on a special report. Let's listen to it.
The four-page FBI flash alert was sent to election officials after foreign hackers targeted voter registration databases in at least two states. The FBI reports that 8 IP addresses, each a unique numeric code identifying an individual computer, used readily available software to scan the Board of Election websites for vulnerabilities. Then after a successful breach, voter data was stolen.
You're seeing more and more manifestations of information warfare via cyber means to destabilize U.S. public opinion and undermine the trust and confidence in American institutions, for example, like the electoral system.
The FBI alert asks that states contact their Board of Elections and determine if any similar activity to their logs, both inbound and outbound, has been detected. The same threat prompted Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson to hold a conference call with state election officials in mid-August, offering the services of federal experts to scan for additional weakness and shore up the voting systems. The White House said it's considering whether the electoral process deserves the same Homeland Security safety net as the power grid.
And that would give the federal government and experts of the federal government
more of a role in assisting the administrators of those networks as they deter intrusions.
While the feds would not address reporting that Illinois and Arizona were targeted, there seems little doubt that other states may also be affected.
All states should begin with the perspective that they may have already suffered such a compromise by some actor.
The FBI alert comes after confirmation that foreign hackers, likely Russian-backed cyber militias, successfully stole records from the Democratic National Committee, the DCCC that raises money for Democratic House races, as well as a possible breach of the nonprofit Clinton Foundation. A former Bush Homeland Security Administration official said the issue goes beyond November.
If we ended up having a razor-thin election and there's any question of even a small number of votes, that could create a crisis of confidence in the entire electoral process.
So you see what's happening here? Anybody remember the election with the hanging chads and Al Gore and President George W. Bush? Do you see the groundwork that's being laid here? I just see it. It is just be prepared. You know, we said probably 6 months ago, maybe 5 or 6 months ago, I don't recall exactly, that the left would not go down lightly. There's no way they would just see what the results are in the November 2016 election. And gee, if Mrs. Clinton wins, then well, fine. And if she doesn't, well, we'll come around next time. And that with the advances and the gains that they have made under the presidency of Barack Obama, and that they will pull out all the stops to prevail in November. And I just see them laying the narrative right now to make the American people think it's the Russians helping Donald Trump. Now, this is a conspiracy. This is me saying this. Okay, I'm telling you, raising my hand. Yes, that's me. It's just not that hard to detect that they are sort of, you know, my understanding is that we're not even sure it was the Russians who hacked the DNC. I know that Julian Assange, I believe he sort of cast some doubt on that. I'm not sure that they know for sure who actually did that hacking, but they are happy to say it's the Russians, happy to say that he's connected to, that the Russians are connected to Donald Trump. And, you know, with this election, well, gee, you know, it's Vladimir Putin weighing in to help Donald Trump prevail. So this is the narrative, at least it's a possible potential one that they could use to undermine the election. As I understand it, Hillary Clinton is 7 points ahead in an average of the polls. So if she's 7 points ahead, they probably won't have to do this. If that proves to be true, but if it's within a couple of points, I'd say maybe I could say even 10 points, there's danger. But the fewer the points that separate Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, the more likely that stuff like this is going to be employed. And it's pretty scary, really. It truly is. Well, we didn't talk yesterday about Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, refusing to stand for the pledge. But I want to talk about it just for a second today. Adam Housley did a report last night. Let's listen to it, and then I have a few things to tell you.
To me, this is something that has to change.
He's not the first, nor likely the last, professional athlete to publicly protest what he sees as social injustice. But San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick says his decision not to stand for the national anthem when it's played before NFL games will continue. He says it is meant to support people who have been unfairly treated because of their race.
When there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
The former starting quarterback for the 49ers had been most recently known for his struggles and injuries on the field. But that changed on Friday night when his defiance was first reported during a preseason game with the Green Bay Packers.
There's a lot of things that need to change. One specifically is police brutality. There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. Cops.
All right, I'm going to interrupt the report because you've been hearing this and you know the story. He says he's identifying with Black Lives Matter. It's because of police brutality. He talks about how police are being paid time off, paying for tied off for killing people. And that's basically what he said. Well, the San Francisco Police Officers Association is furious. They sent a letter to the NFL and they said it will not stand by while Kaepernick attacks police officers in this country with a statement such as people are on paid leave while people of color are killed. The organization that Kaepernick's comments show the quarterback has an incredible lack of knowledge regarding our profession and officer-involved shootings, but also shows a naivety and total lack of sensitivity toward police officers. They end by they say a lot of things. They challenge the NFL to challenge him. They also ask for Kaepernick to come into the police academy and actually see what's happening. One other thing before I tell you the real nut of this, because there's really I don't know who's reporting this. I didn't hear it on Fox last night, but I'm going to get to this in just a second. I want to point out one thing. In an article in The Atlantic, it talks about the Star Spangled Banner has about having strong ties to slavery. And, you know, I don't even know where to begin. Do I need to explain that the Star Spangled Banner had nothing to do with slavery? You know, I remember the last verse, "Oh, thus be it ever when free men shall stand between their loved homes and the war's desolation, blessed with victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land praise the power that has made and preserved it a nation." And this be our, what is it, something, and this be our motto, "In God is our trust, and the Star-Spangled Banner forever shall wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave." This is the most beautiful, beautiful piece of music that has nothing to do with race. It has to do with freedom. And, of course, many of us are upset about the things that are happening in America, and we could refuse to sing the Star-Spangled Banner because of the policies of the Justice Department, the IRS, the president. We could pick out individual things that we absolutely hate about what's happening right here. But that the Star-Spangled Banner transcends all of that, and that's my brief comment on that. But here's the nut of what I want to tell you. We now know that Kaepernick has a girlfriend. Her name is Nessa Diab. She is a DJ on MTV. She's Muslim. They are getting ready to get married. They're going to have an Islamic-style wedding. Nessa Diab, his fiance, has also supported the brutal communist dictatorship of Cuba. And according to Terrence Owens, who is a sports gossip blogger, he says, "We're now hearing it was actually his girlfriend Nessa's idea for Colin to protest." So there is a lot more to this. You know, the Star-Spangled Banner is blatantly about service to God, and it isn't Allah. It's about the heaven-rescued man, land, bless the powers that have made and preserved us a nation. I can't remember the first phrase. "When our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God do we trust." It's just the most beautiful song. So I think there's a lot more behind Kaepernick not standing for the anthem. And this is what happens when a people are divided and they don't have a common faith system. You can't force people to be Christians. That's not what I'm saying. I wouldn't want that. But the predominant faith in this country is faith in Jesus Christ. Even if people don't understand the Lordship of Christ, they understand who God is, the God of our fathers. They understand the foundations of Western civilization are based on the trust in God, that God, not Allah. And so when we bring in a people who are unwilling to bow the knee or to be honor and respect the traditions, the songs, the constitution of the country in which they've chosen to live, this is what happens. So Kaepernick has other reasons not to stand, and that needs to be exposed. And by the way, that's from the Daily Caller. We should put that on our Facebook page so you can share it. The Daily Caller: Kaepernick's communist sympathizing Muslim girlfriend believed to be behind protest. Pretty important stuff. Oh, there's so much more to say. Today's an election in Arizona. John McCain, Kelly Ward is challenging him. Also, Paul Gosar, who is part of the Freedom Caucus, who challenged John Boehner, is coming under attack. And then Sheriff Joe Arpaio is coming up for his seventh election. He's 84 maybe. That makes more sense. Sheriff Joe is coming under attack by the Justice Department for enforcing immigration laws down there. As always, it's been going on for 9 years. And so it's his election today. If you know people in Arizona, pick up the phone, call them, tell them to be sure and vote in the right way. The one that, you know, blesses this country. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Since September 11, 2001, the U.S. has lost 7,000 lives and $2 trillion in the battle against global jihad. What is needed is a strategy that will allow us to win. What are the best strategies to defeat this threat? And is there an end to this war in sight? I'm Jerry Boykin, the former commander of the Delta Force and executive vice president of the Family Research Council here in Washington. Join me along with Philip Haney, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, and Dr. Zudi Jasser as we discuss these very issues. That's at the Values Voters Summit, September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Please visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register, or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Freedom is an amazing gift from God, and He's given us an incredible number of heroes charged with the job of protecting it. I'm Eric Horner, and I'd like to invite you to be a part of doing something really special for those who've answered freedom's call. On Saturday, September 17th, Operation Tankful of Love, in partnership with American Family Radio, will again be working to bless the men and women serving at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, with a gift of some free gas.
Living the life of a soldier is rough with being away from family and having to deal with just the environment that's there sometimes, and this kind of stuff raises morale.
The sacrifice that you guys make makes the sacrifice that we make so much worth it.
If you'd like to be a part of Operation Tankful of Love 2016, you can give us a call at 877-968-3742 to make your tax-deductible donation. You can also donate online by going to tankfulofloveoff.com. Won't you join us in being the hands and feet of Jesus to those who serve?
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. The city of Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, had a dilemma. They needed high ground to build a new 1-million-gallon water tower. But the local First Baptist Church owned the highest land in the area. So they reached a deal. The church agreed to donate the property so long as the city painted the name of the church on the tower. Pastor Nick Garland.
Well, we claim it's the largest baptistry in the state at 1 million gallons.
But it turns out the Freedom From Religion Foundation has a problem with the water tower. They say it's against the law, and the perpetually offended bunch of atheists and free thinkers want the church's name removed. The city says a deal is a deal, and they refuse to budge, even if it means a lawsuit. Oh, those silly atheists. They probably think the tower's filled with holy water.
But if it did, we'd have a lot of conversions down the valley, I'm telling you.
I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Even in a city seemingly numb to skyrocketing gun violence, the murder of a 32-year-old mother of four stands out. Nikia Aldridge was pushing a baby stroller with her one-month-old inside when she was struck in the head and arm by gunfire. The infant was unharmed. Two brothers are now charged with first-degree murder. Police say Aldridge was an unintended target.
We forgive you!
Darwin Sorrells went to prison for, among other things, possession and use of a firearm by a felon. Darren Sorrells, also a felon and documented member of the Gangster Disciples, according to police. Both were on parole last Friday. One of them was wearing his ankle monitor. The other had a break from his ankle monitor to look for a job.
These two offenders are the prime example of the challenge we face here in Chicago with repeat gun offenders that don't care who they shoot, don't care whose life they take, and clearly don't fear the consequences of their actions.
The case made national headlines because Aldridge is the cousin of Chicago Bulls star Dwayne Wade. He commented only over Twitter, writing, RIP Nikia Aldridge, hashtag enough is enough, and the city of Chicago is hurting. We need more help. The murder became politicized with Donald Trump taking to Twitter and the stump.
Failed Democratic policies. The policy of Hillary Clinton have created this high crime and crushing poverty, absolutely crushing poverty. In so many communities under Democratic control, we have bad schools, no jobs, high crime, and no hope. It can't get any worse.
As far as what Mr. Trump said, I don't have a whole lot of comment on that. If you have a magic bullet to stop the violence anywhere, not just in Chicago, but in America, then please share it with us.
Murders are up almost 50% in Chicago from last year, and the victim is often not the intended target. About 47 of the people shot or killed around Chicago were known to police. They keep a list of some 1,400 individuals police say are responsible for 85% of the shootings in the whole city. However, a spokesman says with lax laws, they're unable to keep those arrested behind bars.
Well, that's a report from Mike Tobin of Fox just last night. But, you know, 400 people were shot in Chicago alone in August, and August is not quite finished. One of them is 10-year-old Tavon Tanner. He was playing in a he was playing outside with some other kids. He gets shot. He's got all of this damage to his body. The Chicago Tribune reports that he doesn't talk as much. He cries more often. Sometimes he'll ask if the police have arrested the person who shot him, but no one's in custody so far. And again, 400 people shot in Chicago. Can you imagine? Well, no one knows more about violence and guns than my next guest, John Lott. Of course, you know him well. He's a president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He's the author of More Guns, Less Crime. And the most recent book he has written is called The War on Guns. And he used to be a professor at the University of Chicago, so he knows a lot about what goes on there. John, thanks for joining me this morning.
Well, thanks very much for having me on.
You know, this shooting of Nikia Aldridge, of course, she's the famous person among the 400 who've been shot, the cousin of Dwayne Wade. I find it really curious, John, that these two men were on parole and one was without his ankle bracelet. Wasn't there recently another crime like this where a guy had taken his ankle bracelet off and killed someone within like an hour of that time? I can't remember which story it was. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I vaguely remember it.
Yeah. I can't remember.
The irony is, go ahead.
No, you go.
Right. I mean, the irony is we have one presidential candidate who wants to reduce the number of people in prison in the United States by 50%. And she claims that reducing the number of people in prison by 50% would have no impact on the crime rate. Yet you're giving examples where people who are released in different ways are creating real mayhem.
You know, in regard to that, I was just reading, Baltimore and so many other cities are experiencing this surge of killings and crime. 200 homicides in Baltimore. That was the goal. Yeah, a great goal. They just reached. And the divide between people in the black community over what to do. Some, you know, begging for police to come and do what they've always done, enforce the law, and others, you know, continuing to demand that because the Justice Department declared them racist, that they should stand down, which is what police are doing pretty much everywhere, isn't it, John?
Well, it's become a lot more difficult for them to do their jobs. Their risks that they face, as prosecutions in places like Baltimore indicate, even when it turns out that they were doing their job and doing it properly. I mean, you have too many times, like the police officer in Ferguson, where people make charges against the police, or even the recent shooting in Milwaukee, for example. And it turns out later that the charges were misplaced, that the officers had, in fact, been doing exactly what they were supposed to be doing. But people try to make political hay of it. And so you have others who don't kind of understand that the charges against the police were wrong, who get outraged and they take out their unjustified anger on the police.
You've just written an article, which we want to talk about for a second, and you alluded to this. You wrote an article kind of comparing Hillary Clinton's policies to Trump's policies. And I don't know, let me ask you first, John, are you part of the Trump team or is, you know, I'm just curious to know that.
No, I have nothing to do with the campaign.
All right, so you are just assessing what their policies are on law and order and guns, and you say that Trump's policies are better for blacks. Based on what?
Well, you know, I think that if you have more police, if you punish people who do bad things, you make it, you're going to lower the crime rate. And the differences between the two in terms of crime couldn't be starker. As I said, Hillary Clinton wants to reduce the prison population by 50%. Donald Trump, given his concern about the high violent crime rate, thinks that the way to go and deal with that is to have more police. I mean, Hillary Clinton's the first major presidential candidate who has refused to even apply for the endorsement by the Fraternal Order of Police, the nation's largest police union. I mean, it's not too surprising when you go and you read the questionnaire that they have there, where they go and they want the presidential candidate, for example, to say that they understand that going and having more gun control isn't the solution for reducing crime. That's a big part of her thing. My concern is that a lot of the Democratic policies will disarm the very people who need guns the most for self-defense, poor blacks who live in high-crime urban areas. Police are important, and I think more police will help. But I think one thing that the police understand clearly themselves is that they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crime's occurred. And the difference between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in terms of whether to allow individuals to be able to go and defend themselves couldn't be greater. Hillary Clinton keeps on pushing rules that make it costly and to go and obtain a gun for self-defense. And you know, while, let's say, a $125 free fee for transferring a gun may not stop you or I from being able to go and get a gun if we live in Washington, D.C., there are a lot of poor, law-abiding blacks who would be stopped as a result of that.
You know, this is an obvious question to you and me, but it has to be asked because it isn't obvious to everyone. The public gets very confused about this. John, they hear about all these shootings. I just talked about the stats in Chicago, which are unbelievable. The stats in Baltimore are also. Milwaukee now, you know, going up. And it's all gun violence. And so people say, hey, with all the gun violence, we have to outlaw guns. We've got to get the guns off the streets. Well, could you just point out, where are these guns coming? Let's say in Chicago, where did all those guns come from that shot those 800 people this year?
Well, they're largely drug gangs. The problem that you have with drug gangs is you go and you pass different types of laws, and you're not going to be disarming the drug gangs any more than we've stopped them from having illegal drugs to go and sell. If you pass laws that primarily disarm good, law-abiding citizens relative to the criminals, you actually are going to make it easier for criminals to prey on victims that are there and easier for them to go and commit crimes. These are tough neighborhoods. I lived on the south side of Chicago. There are places within a couple of blocks of where I live where I would have been quite nervous walking around. And I can't blame the people who live in those areas for being nervous for walking around in those areas. I have had friends of the family attacked just outside of our building, suffering brain damage and other problems. But, the question is, for those people who have to live there, if the police can't be there, what are they supposed to do? And it turns out that having a gun is by far the safest course of action. That's particularly true for two groups of people. It's true for people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime, and that overwhelmingly tends to be poor blacks who live in high-crime urban areas, and people who are relatively weaker physically, women and the elderly. The presence of a gun represents a much bigger change for a woman's ability to resist an attack than it does for a man.
You know, I think a lot of Americans are getting the message. And Pew Research, you know, just came out with a poll that said that gun ownership has risen to 44% of all American homes. Is that a really, I don't know what the increase is, John, but from your database of knowledge, is that a huge increase?
Well, the last poll that Pew had was 2 years ago, so, and that showed 37%, so that's a significant increase. My own belief is that the earlier poll underestimated it, and I wouldn't be surprised if the current poll, 44%, underestimates gun ownership. There's a number of reasons for believing that not everybody who gets surveyed will accurately report whether or not they own a gun. There's some real questions that as people's distrust of government has increased, they become less and less willing to go and tell pollsters whether or not they own a gun there. And there's all sorts of other problems. So, for example, married men are twice as likely to claim that a gun is owned in the home than married women are. And that can make a pretty big difference in terms of a lot of these surveys that are there. So, it could be that men are claiming that they own a gun when they don't. But I think more likely is that most of the problem involves women who live in a household with a gun but don't want to tell a pollster that they do.
Well, and for good reason. You know, remember when Obamacare was implemented? One of the most bizarre things to come out of that was that doctors were required to ask people, patients, if they had a gun in their home. And I heard, I wish I could be more specific about this because I heard it in passing, but from a reliable source, that a politician just this week in the Northeast said something about we should prevent crime, take care of crime before it happens, and we should be arresting people when we suspect. And gun owners are very likely to be the ones committing crime since they have the guns. I can't fill in the rest of the blank, but I don't know if you heard that. But there is this stigma that's being portrayed for gun ownership. So we are really entering a very new phase, John, aren't we?
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's only going to get worse if depending upon the outcome of this election. But, there's a good chance, extremely high chance that if Hillary Clinton wins, she'll appoint Supreme Court justices who would essentially strike down the Second Amendment in terms of whether or not it allows individuals to a right to self-defense, let alone a right to self-defense with a gun. And you would have then, again, places like Washington, D.C., and I fear California now, that would go and effectively ban handguns, for example, for people to be able to use them for self-defense. So Hillary Clinton says she just wants to change the Supreme Court decisions to allow reasonable regulations. But the Heller and McDonnell decisions, the two that she's mentioned that she wants to have overturned, the Heller decision only dealt with a complete gun ban in Washington, D.C. So if she overturns it, the only thing that will change is that governments will again have the power to completely ban guns.
John, we just have 2 minutes left. Give us a brief history or link between taking guns away from people and totalitarian governments. What do we know about the history of that?
Right. Well, totalitarian governments want to go and make it easier to control people. They know that they get people upset and want to restrict how people can go and respond. And so whether it's been Communist China or Russia or obviously Hitler's Germany, you have a large number of places, Mussolini and Italy, which go and make sure that they prevent people from being able to go and fight back. And so taking away people's guns make them relatively easier for, those countries to control their populations. One thing I will say, and that's I have a chapter in the War on Guns on this, and that is every place in the world that's banned guns, that we have crime rate data before and after the ban, finds large increases in murder rates after bans have gone into place. You would think just out of randomness you'd get one place where murder rates went down. And in fact, every single place after guns, either all guns or all handguns have been banned, murder rates go up. And I think it gets to the simple point that we made before, and that is if you pass a law that relatively disarms law-abiding citizens relative to criminals, you make it easier for them to commit crime.
John Lott, and the book is called The War on Guns. It's his latest book, The War on Guns. And by the way, his article, Sorry Hillary, Trump's Policies Are Clearly Better for Blacks, we'll put that on our Facebook page, and a link to the brand new book by John Lott. Also, it's crimepreventionresearchcenter.org, crimepreventionresearchcenter.org. John, thanks so much. It's always great to talk to you.
Thanks, Sandy.
All right.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The media can be a tool of division or unity. It can lift up, tear down, show mercy, or destroy. Elections and relations influenced and strained. Wake up and see the great deceiver routing the masses down a deceptively dangerous trail. They move the masses with both their silence and their loud, distracting chatter. As Carol Bauer wrote in the Capitol Prayer Alert, even though campaign news is generated every hour by rallies, soundbites, polls, and television interviews, the mass media are driving home a narrative that the race is nearly over. They seem quite eager to remove the American voter from the equation. The message seems to be, we the press bigwigs and the multinational corporations know it is best for you, the American people. The only thing missing is the actual words, we know better, just trust us. Dear friend, let us not be deceived. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth
has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations.
As Christians, we've all been called to make disciples of all nations, but not all of us can go to the ends of the earth. Hi, this is Bert Harper. Join me for Exploring Missions, connecting mission needs with those equipped by God to meet those needs across the world or across town. That's Exploring Missions, Sunday afternoon at 1 Central on AFR Talk.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Last year in October, 25 inches of rain fell in the state of South Carolina. 16,000 homes had flood damage, and now you and I get a chance to bless them as they wait for somebody to come and help rebuild their homes. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. We expect thousands of volunteers from around the country to come to that beautiful state. You can come for 3 days. You can come for all 8 days. We love families. We need roofers and electricians and plumbers and carpenters. And we need people like me that are less skilled, but just are excited to serve somebody in need. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. Hope to see you there.
The trip is October 8th through 15th. Volunteer for a minimum of 3 days at 8daysofhope.com. And if you'd like to help but are not able to go, financial donations are also needed. Sign up or give at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Evidently, anti-American billionaire George Soros is behind the United States' surrender of functional control of one of its greatest gifts to the world, the Internet. The Soros team seems to believe that, as the Daily Caller put it yesterday, quote, private actors on the Internet must be brought under international control in order to prevent them from suppressing each other's freedom of expression and speech, unquote. It's no small irony that the website section where DC Leaks hacktivists posted information lifted from Soros' philanthropies has mysteriously gone offline. So much for freedom of expression. And much more of that will happen if George Soros and his friend Barack Obama succeed next month in getting the U.S. to turn over the critical function known as ICANN to international stakeholders dominated by the likes of Russia, China, and Iran. That must not be allowed to happen. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know, I have to say that one of the things that I probably don't say this often enough, you know, God's work is so much greater and so much more expansive than the politics, the news, which is important because it affects our lives. And I think we should be aware and I think we should fight. But there's a much greater picture going on. I was just reading in Luke. I was on the plane coming back from Vancouver. I love riding on airplanes because I can actually sit by myself. My husband was in a different row and just think and pray and read. And so just reading in the book of Luke, the description of when all things are going to come to an end. And It talks about all the dreadful things that are going to happen. And then this great verse that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, then lift up your eyes because your redemption draweth nigh, when we see Jesus coming. And so there's another way to lift up our eyes, and that is to get our minds on heavenly things and God's work in the hearts of men all over the globe, which transcends. You know, it's like I think sometimes when I go, I used to go running a lot, but when I'm out in nature and I see the animals and I see the trees and the leaves change and all of that, they are sort of separate from the affairs of men. That stuff just continues to go, the sun rising, the sun setting, because it is a greater, it's much greater than the world in which we mostly, you know, do our lives. And it's a good thing to get into the eternal and to the stuff of God and get our heads out of these daily things. And that's what we're going to do right now, because India Partners is in the business of providing homes for orphan children in India. And of course, that sounds like almost like a cliche. If you haven't been to these countries, it's hard to imagine. And that's why it's probably good to hear from a little boy who is going to be the recipient of the work of India Partners. Let's listen to what he has to say.
At home, I had to focus on survival. I had no father to take care of me, just to make it. I would just find things here and there, like food. After moving here to the children's home, I am happier. We are getting good food. We are getting snacks. And the people here take care of me. But it's very crowded and difficult to sleep with so many people. We do not have enough beds in the rooms because it is so packed. Each bed is built for one child, but we usually have to sleep two there. It is 8 to 10 children sleeping in one small room. It is very hot and unpleasant with little air. If we are given another room and building, we will have more space and more bathrooms, so we don't have to always share and wait a long time. It would be easier to sleep and play, and we will have more teachers to take care of us.
All right. I have to laugh because in our time in Vancouver, Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia is usually pretty cool, and so people don't have air conditioning. And we were just there during one of the warm, the sun doesn't even shine that much. It's like Seattle. And we were there during a very hot week, and we had no air conditioning at night, and it was so miserable. And my husband and I thought about how spoiled we are, how very, very spoiled we are. So you can understand in these hot days where many of you live in warm climates, miserable it would be without any air conditioning. That's a small problem, but it can be a big problem. And that's something that India Partners is trying to sort out. It's the crowded space in their orphanage. David Harms is with India Partners, and he joins me this morning to tell us what it is they're up to. Good morning, David.
Well, good morning, Sandy. It's always good to kind of give you an update on things that God is doing in India through India Partners. So we're excited about this new project. You know, you shared a story from Srinus, and I've met Srinus. Srinus is an 11-year-old boy, and he's kind of talking about this orphanage and children's home that we run. Now, if you remember, about a year ago, we were here and we asked the AFR family to step up and expand a children's home that was just bursting at the seams. And boy, I tell you, it came through. It was amazing to see the response. And so we actually were able to expand that children's home. But and I want to be careful because we know how governments work. And sure enough, not too long after the whole thing was expanded, the government changed the building codes. And with no notice, really, or very little notice, they basically said, okay, all children's homes, not just ours, but all the children's homes have to now operate separate buildings for boys and girls. You can't just put them on different floors, which is what we've been doing, right? In fact, we expanded, we added floors. And they said, you can't do that. And so now that we've been kind of a bit under the gun, because they gave us a deadline of September 15th to actually break ground and start building a separate home for boys.
Wow.
Now, the good news is we were able to buy the land and get it prepped, and all the permits and everything are all set. We need to raise the money for the actual building of this boys' home.
So how much do you need, David?
So, well, overall, the project to build it is $148,000. So we've been asking if today, Just today, you, as you listen, could be one of 1,000 people that would give a gift that averages $148. So you could, you know, do your best gift. Maybe it's less. Maybe it's more. Maybe you can give $500 or $1,000 or whatever it is. But if that can happen, then by September 15th, we know we can break ground. So we have a phone number set up. There's links and information at the website. We're just hoping that we could potentially get all the money raised today so that we can break ground on this children's home, and then these boys would not be under threat of removal and put into another home, because we want them to hear about Jesus, and we're the only Christian children's home and orphanage in this area. So,
all right, let me give the number. Let me give the number. It's 1-800-256-1677. That's 1-800-256-1677, or you can go to AFR.net if you prefer to do whatever you're going to do online. And I have to say, David, the listeners to AFR are the most generous people. Mm-hmm. I don't think we have ever had, since I've been with AFA, I don't think we've ever had an ask that we didn't reach. It just amazes me. And so I'm confident. I just really am. You're going to get the money that you need. And by September 15th is coming right up, you know.
Yeah,
that's what, 16 days away or something? 17, I don't know. I have to count. But let me just say again, the number is 800-256-1677, 1-800-256-1677. The need is $148,000. Maybe somebody listening to me has an extra $148,000 in their bank account, and they can write out a check for that. You never know.
You never know.
Yeah, we're just asking you to be generous in there. What David is saying is if 1,000 of you gave a gift of $148, that would of course, mathematically make a lot of sense. But I have to say, David, God is often much more creative than we are. So let's just see what God does with this. So let's just say 1-800-256-1677. Now, how do these orphanages work? I mean, if you've got several floors, do you have a – how do you do you have the school in the same building? How does this all work?
Yeah. No, the school is a separate facility. This is just the home for boys. And typically, we have all the living space, the room where we have chapel and worship, and the kitchen and the dining area. That's usually the first floor. And then the second and third floors, if we do a third floor, depending on the funding, that's the living quarters. And then currently, we have that for the girls, but the boys are on the first floor in these little classrooms and chapel, and they're crammed in there. It's a very temporary situation. And so we're, you know, by now required to build a separate home. We know we can not just take care of the ones that we have, but now we could expand it and more people can know about Jesus. And so that's what we're hoping to do, is not just build a home that would house the current boys that are there, but to actually expand it. And so all said and done, man, if that can happen, we can then take the current home and more girls can go into the current home and more boys could go into the new home. So there's a lot of potential. We're pretty excited about what this could be, but we obviously do need the funding to make that happen. And in fact, I just was given a note that, oh, well, okay, we have 7 minutes, but somebody has given $1,000 to double gift right now.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
$1,000 doubling gifts for 7 more minutes if they call or go online and make that gift.
Okay. Well, then the number is 1-800-256-1677. See, I told you people at AFR are generous, and it is the truth. 800-256-1677, or go to AFR.net and make your best donation, and it will be doubled by this other generous AFR listener. David, does this mean you're going to need more staff? If you build another building and another dorm, don't you need more people?
Well, we do, and that's part of the ongoing operations of it. And, you know, if we go beyond that, well, that's where we'll start to invest any other money beyond the $148,000. But, yeah, I mean, we have everything ready. This whole ministry is run by a church, a pastor and his wife, Pastor Eleazar and his wife, Prema. And I tell you, every time, you know, Sandy, there are people that you meet and you just shake their hand and you just sense God at work in their lives. This is a couple that is the case. They love Jesus with all their hearts, and it is the compelling nature of who they are that they operate this children's home. I asked Pastor Eleazar just the last time I was there, not too long ago. I said, so I know it was kind of a softball question, but I said, so why do you do this? And when, why do you operate this children's home, and why do you want to grow and expand? And he looked at me with this quizzical look on his face, like he didn't understand the question. And when I repeated it again, his comment back to me was pretty simple. It was like a duh moment. He said, because Jesus commands us to take care of widows and orphans. I mean, it was a pretty simple answer. But he's like, if Jesus said it, we're called to do it. Yeah. And so when we got aware of these orphans and people, like literally boys abandoned on the street, left on their own devices, there's a boy named Nehemiah who'd never known his parents. They just abandoned him and his sister literally on the side of the road, where another pastor noticed them and picked them up and brought them into the orphanage. And they're there now, the boy and his sister. But it was only because Pastor Eleazar and his wife have this facility available. And it was just such a simple moment when he just said, because Jesus said to do it, so we do it.
You know, David, I was in India in, I believe it was 1990, a long time ago now. But I had the chance to visit orphan, maybe even the same one. I don't remember. Wow. It's been so long ago. But the thing that I remember was the passion of the Indian pastors. And at the time, and I think it's still the case, it's the radical Hindus that they fear. Many of the pastors, not many, but some, have even been burned alive. The dangers are very great, and so their passion is great. And it's amazing what God is doing in India, no question about it. I'm curious, do you have more girls than boys?
Well, right now we do, and that's simply because of the space that we have. You know, we built this home, and we expanded it last year so that more girls and boys, but it really, because of the layout, we have accepted more girls into the program, but we want the same number of boys. There's such great need that really, we know that, for instance, girls are more vulnerable, if I can put it that way. There is some trafficking that has been happening in India, not, of course, through India partners, but by rescuing these girls and putting them in these safe homes and teaching them about the love of Jesus, we know that they're safe. All children are safe once they're in these homes, and we just obviously have a heart for this. And by having the bigger building, we can reach more kids and protect them, but also get them to understand how much God loves them through Jesus.
All right. So if you want to help join India Partners, the title, we're calling it Build Room for More. And so if you'd like to build room for more, and especially those boys in India, the phone number is 800-256-1677. That's 1-800-256-1677. Or go to AFR.net and make your most generous donation. You know you won't be sorry. You never are you? You're never sorry. You picked up the phone and gave, you know, generously of what God has given you. And that is what we're required to do. In fact, when we get off the air here, I'm going to do the same thing because we want to help build that orphanage and help encourage India Partners that their brothers and sisters in Christ in the United States here are supporting their work in any way that we can. David, we just have a minute left. Is there anything else you want us to know?
Just obviously a big thank you if you've given in the past, asking you to give again. And I'll put it in here with 3 minutes to go. You do have a chance to double your gift. So maybe you could do $1,000 and just meet that challenge just yourself or however it might work. But please double your gift right now. You've only got a couple of minutes. That was the parameter of this gift. So call 800-256-1677 or information on the ability to give is at AFR.net.
All right, AFR.net, I'm repeating, 800-256-1677, 800-256-1677. Get your mind off the bad news and do something on behalf of the kingdom. And trust me, it's very healing for all of us. David Harms, thank you so much for your good work with India Partners, and thanks for sharing with us this morning this great need.
A pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, my pleasure. All right, Sandy Rios, it does feel good to get off the news for a minute, doesn't it? A little brain rest. Thank you, Lord, for taking us out of the circumstances of this world and putting our mind in higher places. All right, I'll be back tomorrow on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.